A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can drive change or build an empire. Because old ideas aren't cutting it anymore. This new year, we need a new generation of thinking, your way of thinking. So whatever you have in mind that will help make a different future, find everything you need to get started at GoDaddy.com. Because the future isn't decided yet. It's still ours to win. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of That Movie Show. Mike Wendt and Eddie McCabe taking you through another week of movie talk. Eddie, how you doing today?
Oh, every day is the same. Nothing changes except for maybe we'll be on fire tomorrow.
Yeah, full disclosure, we are recording this on November 3rd, which for the rest of you is Election Day. So
yeah,
I would say get out and vote, but you hopefully already did.
Yeah, hopefully you already did.
By the time you hear this, you should have, if not too late.
Yeah. You're either listening to this because nothing changed, or you're not listening to this because everything changed, and now we're in Road Warrior.
Amazing. Imagine if this was like the only thing left on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, God. That'd be wild.
I would really have to apologize to the
internet. Yeah. Yeah. Especially because, look, over the weekend, Sean Connery died. And we were all really sad about it. And I thought about calling an audible and doing like a James Bond movie, the last Indiana Jones movie, you know, something that had Sean Connery in it, even Finding Forrester, one of my favorite Sean Connery movies, about him as a like an old, decrepit, shut-in author. That's absolutely fantastic. But I thought that keeping in this and watching Pool Boy drowning out the Fury was far more important than honoring the legacy of one of the greatest actors of all time, because this
I thought this honored him very well.
Yeah, of course.
Indirectly.
Oh, indirectly. By just how bad this was?
Yes, I guess. I don't know. Just talking out of my ass at this point. Again, though, it's weird when someone like Sean Connery dies. Because your instinct is, oh, it's sad. It's sad when anybody dies, obviously. But then it's like, oh, he was 90. That's awesome. Like, he lived a full, like, more of a life than anyone could living.
Right.
And it's one of those things that, yes, it's sad when anyone dies, no matter how old they are. It's like, you know, you see a guy like Sean Connery that lived to 90, and it's like, he doesn't have many regrets.
No.
Maybe one or two. And of course, cancel culture is already attacking him after he's dead, but whatever.
Jeez. Yeah. Stop it. They're dead. Leave them alone.
Look, it's not my joke. Somebody else made it, but they were talking about when cancel culture was going after a Playboy interview with John Wayne. And it's like, oh, we need to cancel. God did it 70 years ago. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
The guy's been dead for 12 hours. Why didn't you do this yesterday?
Yeah, you don't actually care, right?
Oh, you just Googled Sean Connery the first time ever.
Yeah, stop it. Knock it off. It's like, we didn't cancel Kobe, and Kobe raped somebody. Like, you know what I mean? So stop it.
Yeah, but he changed his number. So
Yeah. 8 was the rapist. 24, he's the good guy.
Yes. Weird start to the show, Ed.
You know what?
It's a very Fuck 2020 it. Start to the show.
Fuck it. You know? Here's the thing. All right, you want to talk about, let's talk about what we're watching.
Sean Connery. Fuck Kobe. What?
Well, no. Look.
Where are we heading with this? You know, you can tell we watched a really bad movie today. We're both in a mood.
Yeah. Look, I finished season 3 of The Wire.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Tell me about it.
I did not enjoy it as much as the other two seasons.
Welcome everybody to Wire Talk. Strap in for the next hour.
Yeah, strap in. This is going to be a majority of the episode, and we're going to wrap it up with, Pool Boy, racist, awful, terrible movie. Kevin Sorbo was in it. But But that's how this all started, actually, because the guy that plays the producer in Pool Boy, he was one of the Greeks in season 2 of The Wire. And when I was looking up, because I was like, you seem very familiar, and he was in this movie. I was like, oh, we got to do this movie because it's awful. And I'm sorry for that. But then I watched season 3 of The Wire, and I didn't really like it. It wasn't as strong as seasons 1 or 2. And part of the problem that I had with it is that the show took a bunch of the characters and just basically wrote them differently and in ways that were all dumber.
Okay.
So Stringer Bell and Avon, they were just dumber this season. And it was really kind of frustrating to watch because in season 1, Avon Bark is very incredibly smart, right? He's set up as this guy that's uber paranoid and super just like, you know, calculating. And the reason why they didn't even know he existed was because he was so smart and kept his name out of things and didn't put actual money, like he didn't put his name on property or anything like that, so that nobody could actually trace him to the drug organization that he actually ran. And in season 3, he's just so stupid because it feels like his character just took a 180 and he's just like, nah, man, I need my corners. Like, I gotta have all the drug corners. And it was just like, well, the big thing in the season, for those of you who haven't seen The Wire, is that in this police district, the police captain or major or whatever the hell they call him, he's basically designated. Yeah. They've designated several streets in the area where if you sell drugs or do anything really illegal in these areas, then we're not going to bother you. The cops aren't going to bother you. Drug and free. So, yeah, it's just, they call it the free drug zone. And so the Avon Barksdale in the first episode would have jumped at that opportunity, especially when he's met out of coming out of prison with Stringer, and Stringer's like, look, here's the deal. I've legitimized a ton of our business and we're now in like real estate development and we're making like real money developing property and condos and things like that. Sure. And the Avon Barksdale in the beginning of this show would have loved that. Oh, everything's legitimate. Everything's above board. I get to make my drug money on the side, but I'm making more money on the actual property and stuff. And for him to be just all consumed with virtually one person who's like extremely insignificant throughout the whole season was really annoying. Also, the way has focused on those two characters specifically, the way that they exit the show, or at least exit like one of them permanently and one of them at least for the foreseeable future, is so unceremonious. Like the moment of, you know, and again, this show's old if you haven't seen it, but like Stringer Bell getting killed was not like it just happened. And it's like, oh, that moment should have been so much bigger.
Well, and I'm not gonna spoil it for you. You're gonna hate a moment later in the series then. But there's a different way of looking at just the Stringer Bell thing. It's tied back to first season. Brandon,
right?
Omar's boyfriend,
right?
And it's also, it's one of those things that we, as television viewers, we always assume there's going to be this entertainment sensationalized moment. But in shows like this, it's like, oh, this is how this guy would have died. And like most of the cops walking in and out don't even know who the fuck this guy is. It's like,
right.
It takes a paper chain for someone to be like, oh yeah, didn't McNulty have something to do with him like 5 years ago, something like that? You know what I mean?
Right.
So there is that level of realism that they're keeping with how, with basically saying, yes, we understand that this is a television show and this is our main character on this television show, but there's a bigger world around this character, and like these cops that are doing, you know, homicide don't know that this guy is the biggest drug guy around.
Yeah, and the Stringer Bell one is less. It's more Avon, where it's just like the way he gets caught is so stupid. And it's just like, you know, it's like, imagine, you know,
basically what they did is they gave him a character trait that wasn't already established. As you talked about in the first season, he was uber calculating, very, very secretive, you know, like to the point they needed some old Golden Gloves pitcher from, you know, when he was a teenager, just to identify him kind of, you know, just to even get a hint of what he looks like. And then this guy is just, you know, what I took from it was they're saying that, you know, they're trying to establish that this guy did have a past and he was a street level. He worked his way up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he worked his way. And it was kind of one of the things, that he was arguing a lot with Stringer about, and you could tell the importance to him because of probably how long he worked his way up when Stringer was going to share the towers with Prop Joe.
Yeah,
And Avon's like, fuck you, we worked our entire lives to get these fucking towers. And what he wasn't seeing, and again, the guy in season one would have seen it.
Right.
But it's tough because they're giving him a backstory without like having to show you a flashback of old Avon on the corner selling drugs like this.
The problem is that that's Prop Joe's storyline. Right. You know what I mean? Like if you don't have Avon in there and it's Prop Joe instead, then I'm okay with it. I can understand where he's coming from, but it's like you introduced a couple of really cool concepts that now are just going to kind of fall by the wayside and kind of go away. With the like drug council, you know what I mean? Like the UN of drug dealers
it's weird. It's funny. And there are some moments that come out of it that I do enjoy. But it's also a lot of it's speaking to that part of it is speaking very much to Stringer Bell's character.
Right.
Which is he's trying to better himself. Right. He's going to school. He's trying to develop these straight businesses and this real estate shit. And the problem is the people he deals with, A, don't give a fuck, and B, won't understand what he's talking about. So he's sitting there trying to have these union meetings and they're like, dude, let's just go out and shoot everybody.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the worst part.
Why are you counting mileage? Why am I driving to Pittsburgh for no goddamn reason? It was a test. Fuck your test. Let's just take the cornerback with a baseball bat. I don't need any fucking backroom strategery.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the problem. And again, I mean, it's still a good show. Obviously, I got two more seasons left, so we'll see, you know, what ends up happening. Yeah. But it's just like, I would have loved to have watched Stringer turn into a more sympathetic character, right? Because you can see it in season three where And in the way that him and Avon talk to each other, it seems like they are, you know, like Stringer is actually trying to get out of the drug game. Like the drugs were a means to an end, right? Yep. He needed to sell the drugs to get to college, to pay for college, to get the degree, to move into legitimate businesses. And
yes and no. It feels like this is how they came up. They were the Bodie and the Poos of their generation. And then when they got to a certain level, it became one of those scenarios where it's like, well, we didn't expect to live past 20. Now we're pushing 40. We're getting too old for this shit. How long are we going to be banging on corners? It's like, I have this other opportunity because I got all this goddamn money.
Right.
So I'm going to take this opportunity, but fucking Avon's over here trying to play Nino Brown the rest of his life. It just doesn't work, you know?
Yeah. And again, I think it's more Avon than it is Stringer, because Stringer, it felt like a logical progression. For that character. And I would have loved to have gotten to root for Stringer more before they killed him. Like, obviously the ghost of the boy he killed, Brandon, you know, the ghost of Brandon eventually catches up with them, because, you know, you can only outrun your past for so long. But I would have wanted that to get into a moment. Like, I wasn't rooting for him because Stringer wasn't necessarily some linchpin in some like bigger case that would have like toppled everything.
No, but what it also showed was, despite all the attempts to have, you know, legitimate business and straight business and going to school and all that stuff, that as far as their drug business, Avon was the smarter one. And you see that with how many times Stringer fucked up by trying to, it was almost like he was trying to do, because like you said, in the first season, Avon, the cops didn't know who he was. They didn't know what he looked like. And it felt like in this season, Stringer was trying to do that, but he was doing it all the wrong ways. Like, he tried to get Brother Muzon to come in, and then he fucked that up by having Omar try to kill him. And then that led to his death. And then also the stuff with him killing the nephew. You know, setting that up. It's like, this is all stuff that... and I think even Avon might have said it in one of their arguments between him and Stringer, where it's like, you never had this, like, you never had that ability type of thing, where it's like, I think it might have been in the strip club after we were closed, when they fucked up, they fucked up the Orlando thing, because they fucked that up too, and they had all this money that's now police money after they shot Kima, and it's like, you can see that Stringer was thinking way too hard about how to cover his own ass instead of just covering his own ass, because he had all the tools. He had the soldiers, for lack of a better term, underneath him that would have done his bidding and wouldn't have ratted him out. But instead he's going out to other crews and trying to pull this and that, and just trying to, he's opening too many doors. And now it's like, oh, well, you're completely exposed.
Yeah. Right.
You've exposed yourself even more than you possibly knew you could have by involving everybody and fucking it up each and every way. And now nobody on your own crew can trust you.
Right.
And they're questioning your authority, which they never did with Avon.
Right. So that's how I felt. So I've been watching that. And then I've been also watching, I started Dragon Ball Super.
Okay.
And basically So I don't know if we talked about this before, but so Dragon Ball is obviously in the anime like series. So I started at Dragon Ball, like the first series, and I watched all the way through that. Then I rewatched Dragon Ball Z, and then this is the first time I'm watching Dragon Ball Super. And kind of the fun way that this show has been working is they released two movies, but then the first like 24 episodes or so are the retelling of those movies. So I went and I watched the first few, I watched those episodes, and then I went through and they're almost identical. Like, some of the settings are a little different. It's really fun. I'm really enjoying it. It's a much more lighthearted experience than The Wire.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Even though there's far more punching.
Yeah, but it's... Is that the one that everybody does the John Cena meme too?
Yeah, he's got the gold hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's not, it's punching, but it's pro wrestling punching.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Anime. Yes. 100%.
They're doing the work punches.
So that's what I've been doing.
So I was all excited yesterday because I had basically the whole day to myself. I'm like, great. It was November 2nd. I had finished up all my horror movies for the month of October, and now I'm going to settle in because the new season of The Mandalorian has come on to Disney Plus.
Yes, it has.
I sit down, and I start watching, and I get through the first episode, and there wasn't that button for watch next episode. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And I back out to Disney Plus and I hit it again and I look and it says one episode and I go, oh, it's a fucking week to week show.
Yep. Yeah.
I had a whole day for 1 hour of television.
Yeah, that it was great, but yeah, it's week to week, just like the Animal Kingdom show.
That was part of why I was kind of so upset, because it's such a good show.
Yeah.
And this first episode was amazing, and it's brand new, so we're not going to do Mandalorian talk just because I know there's people who haven't watched it yet.
Right.
Because I started texting my brother, and I'm like, have you watched yet? And he's like, I'm waiting till the end, and we're going to binge watch the whole thing. And I'm like, I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about
this. So this is another thing where it's like, so you, like I just mentioned, I had watched Dragon Ball Super, and they had the movies, but then they retold the story of the movies through the show. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like episode 1 through 8 is the Battle of Gods, right? Those are the plots are exactly the same. Sure. And I was thinking about it as I was watching The Mandalorian, and I was just like, they're so much better at this. You know what they should do is if not necessarily reboot or rewrite the movies, but just retell all that time through the sequel trilogy in a TV show.
No. Okay. I agree. I agree and disagree. Because again, we talked about this I think right when the Mandalorian was first announced. And the fact that, you know, there's an entire galaxy out there that's outside of the Skywalker storyline. Yes. And even the show is dipping its toes into it, mostly through settings like Tatooine and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I like that they're exploring different stories and stuff like that. And, but I could see, like, they did it, Disney did it with one, like Lion King 2.5 or some shit like that.
Yeah, sure.
Where they told, like, part of the movie from the Timon and Pumbaa side of it type of thing.
Was one and a half.
1.5, okay.
Yeah.
I could see something like that where it's like they do a series where it's happening at the same time and there's moments of like,
right.
You know what I mean? You dip in, but you don't just, you know, because it's been done. It's been written. Let's do something new, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited for what they're doing with Star Wars, because the whole next part of this franchise is supposed to be in, there's a video game that was on the original Xbox called Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
Which is like 100 years before Skywalker, right?
Yeah. It might even be longer than that. It might even be like 500 years. But the whole thing is that there are like the Jedi and the Sith are both like big things, right? They're like big factions. And so there's a lot more fun that you can have with it as opposed to just like there's three of us and I'm bad and you're good and we're trying to make the other one decide which one he is.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I think Star Wars is probably the movie series we've covered the most on this. I mean, we've done the original Star Wars. We've done all of them except Force Awakens, I think. We did the two sequels.
Yeah.
We did Rogue One.
Yeah.
We did a bonus episode of like something else, but nevertheless, all the things we kept saying about the sequels were, this is going to be great once they can wrap up the Skywalker story, because it's like I get it. That's the built-in audience, for lack of a better term. It's the story that we've been telling for since 1977. So it's like, but once we wrap that up, there's endless possibilities to what we can do with the story, which is why I was like, I dug Rogue. Like I could see like a Rogue One type of series where it's like, I think we probably talked about in our review, where it's like, that was like telling around A New Hope, but from a different angle. You know what I mean?
Right.
Besides the fact we got the greatest Darth Vader moment ever at the end of that fucking movie.
Yeah.
It's like, it was happening at that time, but we didn't get bogged down with all the Skywalker stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like we were able to tell a different story. And I think, I mean, I would, yeah, if I had to pick a movie, I would say Rogue One's probably the best of the new generation movies,
probably
out yeah. of them, you know.
Yeah, well, and I think Mandalorian proved
the post-Disney era.
Yeah, I think the Mandalorian also has proven that people can like Star Wars and it doesn't have to be strictly, you know, good light side versus dark side Jedis.
Right. Tell us the story. Like, you know, it's Star Wars is the setting. Tell right. us a fucking story. Just make a good yeah. fucking show. And that's what they're doing. I love what Favreau and Filoni are doing over with Mandalorian. It's fucking yeah. great. I don't know, and I don't really care if these stories are based on anything or if they're just creating shit themselves. Which is even cooler.
Yeah, I think it's all created on its own, and I'm not so well versed in the Marvel lore. I mean, the Star Wars lore, like right. you know, down to that like post Empire stuff. You right. know, like, but
and fuck that. Man, I mean, Star Wars's lineage has been muddied anyway. It's like right. you know, we started off in the movies having you know. Like the only Mandalorian we knew of was Boba Fett, and then it was revealed he wasn't a Mandalorian; he was a clone or a child right. of a clone or some shit when the prequels came out. So it's like, who fucking cares? Just tell me a story.
Yeah, right. Well, and it's just like
trying to explain everything and just be entertaining.
The best part about it is you haven't explained Yoda or Baby Yoda.
No, I don't want him to.
You know what I mean? Like,
I don't give a shit if they do that in season 5. Like, you yeah. know what I mean?
Right.
There's no rush to get that kid home. You know what I mean?
No. Zero. But yeah, just, you know, I think that Jon Favreau doesn't get enough credit for what he did laying the foundation for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you should just let Jon Favreau lay the foundation for whatever the new Star Wars nonsense is going to be. Because season 1 was fantastic. They gave him more budget. And you can tell by this first season that it's just like, oh yeah, no, we just gave you a real Star Wars movie budget right. is what we did. And have fun.
Yes. I mean, I think they figured it out. It's like, oh, yeah, people are actually signing up just for this show.
Yeah.
Go do. Whatever you're doing, people are paying money to see it. Go do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
But I can't wait for that to finally, I don't want to say wrap up, but I'm so looking forward to this fucking season.
Yeah.
Like the first episode, like I said, I am all in. It was great. It was entertaining. And it's also one of those things that I kind of told my brother this. It's an episode you can watch without needing the whole season. It's not like, you know, it's basically the traveling adventures of this Mandalorian character. You know right. what I mean? Like he's going from system to system, getting in adventures, but they can be one-off episodes, you know, which is very right. cool. It's like, this was a very cool one-off episode. And next week we're going to meet a new bunch of people. You know?
Right. I'm with, see, like, I want another one of these because my favorite thing is like The Mandalorian is a Western, right? If you've ever yes. watched any Western before, it's exactly what it is. It's an interplanetary Western. And I'm personally like,
and they really went Western on that first episode.
Oh yeah. Super. But I'm a big fan of samurai, right? We've Just talked about answer. It. Yeah. They did Seven Samurai. Like they did Seven Samurai before, but it's just like, I love samurai movies and I would love to, you know, there's so much media out, like Jedi Fallen Order was a video game that came out within the last year or two. I don't know. Time's awful. 2020, everybody. But the whole point of that episode or that game, and there's a lot of stuff like it, is, you know, this Jedi escaped Order 66 and they're like living this life where they're not really a Jedi anymore, but due to circumstances, they have to get pulled back into it. And I would love a story like that, where it's just like this, basically a Ronin, just like traveling the galaxy, but they're a Jedi instead of a Mandalorian and they're going on their own separate adventure. It's like, that's what I want. I just want you to tell me that story. I got so mad about the First Order that it's just like, I don't need them to have the underdog story. I just want you to tell me this story about this, you know, this character. I want to watch this character do Ronin Jedi lightsaber shit. That's what I want.
What Eddie is trying to say is, if anyone has any like email or phone number that we can pitch this fucking idea to Disney Plus, please, please tweet at the Eddie McCabe because he's got ideas.
Yeah. And you know, I just need a budget.
Good job, man.
Yeah. I need a job, but I need a budget first. Yeah. I'll make it myself. I just need somebody to just be like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's make that money.
here's a check.
Here's a check.
Go make a check. Go make whatever the fuck Jedi 66 is.
Yeah. So work whatever. Yeah, just make your fucking show or whatever.
All right, you ready to start the show?
Oh God, do we have to?
I think so. Well, let's first do our 30-day film challenge because we are with. Oops, I hit the wrong button there. We are on day 15, which this is a little bit better than last week. This is a film that makes you feel happy.
Yeah. I totally messed up last week, and they. Yeah. And so the film that I did last week was incorrect. It's not A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but in fact, it was the movie Jack, and that was the one that made me depressed.
Okay.
And
we kind of went over this off air, but my question is, where does League of Extraordinary Gentlemen fit?
It falls.
If we haven't done it, just say the day.
I want to say, hold on. I have it pulled up. We haven't done it yet. It's supposed to be into the future, but so if that was, if today is what, 15?
Yep.
21.
20. Oh, yeah, that one makes sense, though.
Jesus and that Christ, one.
You must just.
So the way that I had it, so basically I had them picture stitched in groups of nine, basically. And basically, instead of going down to the next row, I went across. So that's where I'm at.
So what did you say the film that makes
you happy? The one that makes me happy is Meet the Robinsons.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that.
So Meet the Robinsons is
a... Is that the one with Cedric the Entertainer and Ice Cube?
No, that is not that one. This is the one... It's basically... It's a boy who goes into the future... He goes into the future because I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it without, you know, really giving it away.
I mean, spoiler alert for this 2007 film.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't give a fuck. All right. So basically it's about an orphan boy who's like really nerdy and like trying to invent stuff and he wants to get adopted real bad. And he keeps messing everything up because he's a bit of a goof. And he ends up having to go into the future because his son from the future has like broken and like, or he broke a time machine or he let this guy steal a time machine and he has to like basically fix it before his dad gets home from like a business trip. It's the commercial where it's the T-Rex and they're like, why aren't you seizing the boy? And the T-Rex just goes, I got big head and little arms. I don't think this plan was well thought out. And I thought that was the funniest thing in the fucking world. And it still tickles me pink.
Johnson Vacation is what I was thinking of. Way off.
What were you thinking of?
Johnson Family Vacation with Cedric the Entertainer. When you said Meet the Robinsons, that was the box art that I pictured.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no.
I also was thinking of Are We There Yet? And that was the Ice Cube one. That's why I put those
together.
Plus, they're both Barbershop, which is a wonderful movie. Don't watch the other two, but watch that one.
And then there's a lot of like Walt Disney stuff sprinkled in there. Like they basically modeled like the adult version of the kid. Like they give him a lot of like inspirational quotes and they're all Walt Disney inspirational quotes and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting. Very cool. And it is on Disney Plus, so maybe I'll give it a watch.
Yeah. It's one of those forgotten Disney movies.
Definitely. I didn't really know about it.
Yeah.
So it was 2007. The box art, and I think you told me off air, it was 3D also. So it was like one of those things that...
It was like a 3D animated, but it's not. It wasn't Pixar.
It wasn't Pixar, so it probably didn't get as much play as if it was Pixar.
Right.
They weren't doing the damn thing over there. Mine, a film that makes you happy. This is one that I watch multiple times every year. And I think I put it on this list because there wasn't a documentary category on this 30-day film challenge. And this is my favorite documentary, mostly just because, not because it's informative, not because it's, you know, insightful or interesting, but because, goddamn, I love me some early 70s, late 60s Elvis Presley. It's Elvis, This Is the Way.
I'm sorry.
That's not it. That's the Way It Is. Fuck, I fucked that off. Elvis, That's the Way It Is. It's basically, so it's a documentary on his his 1971 comeback to, and which turned into his Vegas run. And it was just off of the 68 comeback special. He was still like in great shape. He wasn't like the fat Elvis. He had done movies, but not like all the movies. And he had a residency at the International Hotel in Las Vegas, which then turned into the Hilton Hotel. And it's just, it's like, if you're an Elvis fan, which I am, I have been since a kid, it's one of the cooler like documentaries because you see like Elvis as a real person type of thing, like just goofing off and having fun and fucking around and talking shit about Tom Jones backstage, which was fun and different. They had a thing. It's also one of my references that, of course, nobody ever gets because not many people have ever seen this, or if they have, they don't watch me on TV or used to watch me on TV. But when, you know, you're sitting there and you have a glass such as this and you're sitting there drinking it on TV, and what's that? Straight vodka, man. Good for you.
Oh, okay.
He was backstage being filmed right before he was going on, and he's taking a big old belt of water and looks into the camera and goes, straight vodka, man. It's good for you. Get you ready.
Yeah.
Fucking love that shit. And yeah, I've owned it on VHS, owned it on two different versions on DVD, and now own it on Blu-ray as well, and I've seen it in theaters. So yeah, to say it's a high praise for me is an understatement. It's a
wonderful okay.
Elvis, that's the way it is.
I need to see more Elvis stuff. Like, I haven't seen most of his movies.
They're tough to find streaming. Like, yeah. I own a bunch on DVD and Blu-ray, but they're and I think it's because he made them for different companies, so they're kind of like all over the place,
right?
You know, he did a bunch for Paramount that got some decent releases, but they're all over the place, and they're really hard to find, especially if you're like me and you know, a few years ago you want to go down like the rabbit hole of I want to watch them all in chronological order. Good fucking luck if you don't own them physically.
Yeah, right. Bananas.
Like, where are you going to stream Jailhouse Rock? I don't know at this moment, and I don't have Google in front of me.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but he did, yeah, he did 33 films, not counting stuff like the documentary concert films and stuff.
All right. But yeah, well, we'll have to try and track those down.
Maybe, what do we got? So, August, he died, so maybe around January is his birthday, we'll do an Elvis movie.
Okay, cool. Done deal. Yeah, let's see if we can make it to January.
Hopefully. Look, I haven't left. I'm pretty secure here in my bunker, so I'm fucking, yeah. Like, you come and try me, I'll suck you on the nose.
Yeah, right.
I watched Talladega Nights the other night. Cal Naughton Jr. He's like, I won this fair and square. You try to take it from me, I'll suck you right in the nose.
You know what? Before we do a review of Talladega Nights, let's do Pool Boy.
Oh, fuck Christ. All right, let's do it.
Forgive me, Father. For I am about to sin.
Just a hardcore Vietnam vet with 86 Purple Hearts who was trained to kill and just come home to find his wife and son dead drowning in a pool.
No!
You really messed him up.
But whoever did this will catch up.
Rash, unapologetic, and he was 10.
All right, pool boy. You want to go to war? I'll take you to war.
It's a pool party.
This is the greatest film I've ever seen in my entire life.
I think it's best you just go.
Yay, Hollywood.
Hey, if you have condoms, that's great. If not, no bigs. I bear back anyway.
Oh, this fucking movie. Pool Boy, Drowning Out the Fury.
technically Pool Boy 2.
We'll get there. We will get there. I have issues with this movie. And not a lot of them are great. First and foremost, the fucking thing barely exists, okay?
Yes.
Like if you didn't find that trailer, which I thought was a fake trailer, we probably wouldn't have found this movie. It doesn't have a Wikipedia page, at least not in America. I had to go to a Denmark Wikipedia page just to even find anything. As far as budget, nope, nothing available. I'm guessing based on what I watched, 2 cents. I'm guessing everybody did favors on this movie.
Sure.
As far as release dates, it was released on DVD in Sweden on July 27th, 2011. I shit you not, that's the only available release date.
Yeah, okay.
It's right now on Amazon Prime. That's how we watched it. Otherwise, I would have definitely said, fuck this movie and not done it.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's be honest. We would have rented it for two.
Sure. Yeah, right.
It stars. Let me find the cast now. Let's see. Pool Boy. This movie. It stars Kevin Sorbo, obviously. Kevin Sorbo, Ross Patterson, Danny Trejo, Jason Mewes, Brian Callen, Mark Curry. Yes, hanging with Mr. Cooper, Mark Curry. Yeah. Elena Urbach, who is underrated funny actress. She was in Waiting, and yep. She did an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia that she was fabulous in. Paul Ben Victor, who you were talking about, was the Greek in The Wire. He was also Mo Howard in the Farrelly Brothers attempt at the fucking Three Stooges. And a lot of these guys a lot of these actors that I'm reading off showed up for like 2 minutes tops.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
Nobody's really in this movie for a long time.
With the exception of Kevin Sorbo and Ross Patterson. And okay. So let's see. It was directed by Garrett Browith, whose only other directing credit was FDR American Badass, which is also on Amazon Prime and has most of the same cast, which is why I'm saying a lot of these people probably did favors. I think Garrett here is just like, he's a working actor. He's done a lot of one episode spots on TV shows. Since 95, he's been working. He's comes across to me like he's probably just like a friendly actor that like is friends with all these people.
Sure.
Because there's no real, like, I tried looking, like, what's the connection? Did he produce a movie? He's only directed these two movies. Did he write a movie? Did he do stunts on a movie with, like, how does he know these people? And my guess is he's probably just a friendly guy they met at a party. His biggest credit, I would say, reading it up and down, is he played Bob Saget in the unauthorized Full House story, the TV movie.
Okay.
Sure. It's written by Ross Patterson, who's an actor in this movie. Ross has also written, let's see, what can we pull from Ross's writing credits? He's got 13 of them. Drinkin' Bros Live, The Shaved Eagle Tour.
So
also Helen Keller versus the Night Wolves was his.
Yep. So there's a couple of things here because I'm glad you brought up Helen Keller versus the Night Wolves. And I haven't
a hot button issue, but all right.
I haven't been able to see find them, and I haven't looked hard enough, but I wanted to find Armed Response and Helen Keller versus the Night Wolves because he also plays St. James Street James in both of those movies.
As well as this one.
As well as this one.
His character, St. James Street James, first of all, fantastic, is the best part of this movie.
He is absolutely the best part of this movie.
And the funny part was, so you recommended that I watch the trailer. Then we decided we're going to do the movie. And it must have been YouTube's algorithm because I watched that trailer that it popped up his YouTube page.
Oh, he's got a YouTube page.
He's got a YouTube page. And I'm like, okay, cool. And the character was in the trailer and I saw the thumbnail. I'm like, oh, that's the character he plays in this thing. So I start watching and there was like a super cut of this St. James Street James character. And then I watched the movie today and it's like, oh, he just took all his bits from the movie and just smashed them into a YouTube video. Okay, smart. Because they were the only best good parts. Not even the best parts, the good parts of this movie. They were fan- like that. That was the that's the positive, right? There's a lot of negative to this movie,
yeah.
And I, if you look up this movie, if you happen to watch it on Amazon Prime, yes, I understand it's a movie that's made to be bad type of thing.
Yeah.
But my problem with it is, it's not one of those. It's so bad it's good. What I watched and what I took away from this movie was it looks cheap. That was my problem.
Yeah.
And like we've covered, like both of us are huge fans of Black Dynamite. We've covered it. We talked to Michael Jai White about it. And that is a movie in this type of vein done well. Like Black right. Dynamite is spoofing blaxploitation movies of the 70s. This movie wants to spoof late 80s, early 90s action movies. And here's my biggest problem with it. All the digital effects that they were clearly, they didn't have enough money for practical effects, even just squibs and blood packs.
Yeah.
And it's like you're spoofing these balls out macho action movies of the late.
Yeah, you got Hercules.
And you're using digital bullet hits. And it's like, and it's not even like they're passing as good bullet hits. It's like, dude, like if you, like you could have been creative with it and made fun of the fact that like, oh, he's got a plastic bag. Like,
right.
That was one. Okay. That was one problem I had. And stop me and jump in at any time. Cause I got a list.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, let me just touch on that. I'll just touch on them as you go. Cause they're probably going to be the same. Yeah. That, so I saw this movie back in 2011, for the first time. Yeah, so I saw it, maybe not necessarily in 2011, I'll have to remember when Black Dynamite came out, but, like, it was around that same sort of, like, high, right? Like, I saw Black Dynamite, and I was like, oh my god, I want more meta weird movies like that, and while I was in film school, and then this came out, and I saw this as well, and the problem is that tonally, it's a nightmare, right? Like,
it didn't know what it wanted to be.
Right. It didn't know what it wanted to be because, and again, I think the best comparison is Black Dynamite. Black Dynamite was a movie that was executed at a very high level, mm-hmm. made to look like it was executed at a very poor level. And whereas Pool Boy was trying to, like, wanted to do the same thing,
right.
but didn't know how to do it. So instead of it actually coming off like, you know, it was actually a genius movie. It just came off like, oh, you didn't really know what you were doing. Mixed with the fact that you tried to be too smart with yourself, because like one of the bits that you find out in the middle of this movie is that Judge St. James Street James was 10 years old when he made this movie. And so he's like basically breaking in and doing commentary throughout the whole thing. And you're relying too heavily on the fact that it's like, yeah, this is what a movie made by a 10-year-old would be.
Yeah, and again, a lot of that stuff feels like, oh, shit, we, like, okay, it feels to me like they wanted to make a movie in the style of Black Dynamite, which was in the same vein as the first two Scary Movies or The Naked
right.
Gun. You know, it's a spoof movie. It's, right. it's you know... So it's not like it's not a mockumentary. It's not like Tropic Thunder, which is a movie about the making of a movie. It's actually a movie that is spoofing the movies that were made back then. And it feels like they got to a certain point and realized that they didn't have either the budget or the technical ability to continue making this movie and pivoted down the let's make a mockumentary out of this.
Right.
And it's evident in the fact that, like I said, all these characters show up for like 1-2 minutes, and
yeah.
most of the time they're in cutaways. Most of the time they're in green screens, the interview type footage, and the St. James Street James stuff. It feels like it was done after the movie just to piece it all together. Like we need like a half an hour of shit, so let's do some comedy bits, and you kind of paste what's missing.
Yeah, together. You shepherd through everything happens.
There was mistakes made that didn't need to be made. And the one that stood out to me The actor's name is Robert Lizardo. If you looked at him, you would pick him out of a lineup. He's a Spanish guy covered in tattoos, bald head, always plays a gang member in movies. Okay.
Right.
You know who I'm talking
about. Yeah.
And it was established in the quinceañera scene that the character he's playing, the actor he's playing, was arrested the day before filming started. So they had to break into prison with a green screen and film his scenes. Okay. Cute, funny, different.
Yep.
It explains why it looks okay. You're explaining the mistake. Fine, I'll let that pass. Three scenes later, he's in the same room with Danny Trejo acting out a scene where he's where he gets eaten by cuddly fake stuffed
plush
animal
dolls.
Plush dolls. Yeah. Here's what should have happened. To keep your, because the movie established continuity. We talked about it in earnest. You can be absurd. I can buy into absurdity, but you need to keep your shit together. And this movie didn't. And so here's what should have happened in this scenario. That actor should have still been on the green screen. And then when you cut to the wide shot of Danny Trejo in the office, you have a stand-in with bad fake tattoos standing there next to Danny Trejo.
Or,
there you go. And you keep your own fucking continuity.
Or you just green screen him into that scene so it looks like he's pasted on top of it.
Sure. But what we're doing here with this type of thing, we're changing actors midstream. Kevin Sorbo's character dies and they replace him with Jason Mewes, who couldn't speak because of SAG, which I actually found a funny joke. The SAG came in and arrested him. How dare he impersonate a union man? That stuff I found funny. And then Kevin Sorbo's character wouldn't do nudity, so they basically added in a bunch of, I don't know, I call it trauma nudity. It's like 5 minutes of just bad sex that involves food. Which again, kind of, it was one of those things where I was with them for that scene up until the point the woman in it all of a sudden is blind and James St. James, whatever the fuck his name is
a
burglar who is also blind, all just to make a dog joke.
Yeah.
It's like, I was fine with you filling the role of Kevin Sorbo for the sex scene and having a different actress play that part. But now all of a sudden these feel like two different people and it never establishes
why
they're the same or why. So like there was a very problematic film for a movie that is supposed to be bad. Like it, again, I'm conscious of the fact I'm watching a movie that was intentionally made to be bad. But you need to do that even almost better than a movie that's meant to be good.
Well, and that's the thing.
Because we talked about it in Black Dynamite. You're walking that line of this is either done really well and effective or it's crap.
Well, so it's funny because there's a very real world example that I had to talk to somebody about. So cheap plug. I've been working on this show. I've been, producing and directing a show called Anything for Money with Improv Asylum. You can find it on their YouTube channel, improvasylum.com/live. You can go there. It'll go to their YouTube channel. You can watch it, right? It's on every other Friday, so not this week, but next week. That's when the next episode will be there. There's three episodes up. Anyway, not the point. We had a conversation with the actors because it's an improv-based show, and they were talking about how do we, make it so that the show is bad. And I had to sit there and actually have this conversation with the actors because when stage actors move into film or actors in general move into production, that's their immediate go-to is just like, well, what if we make it bad on purpose? And it's just like, no. And I had to explain it. And I use Black Dynamite where it's just like if you make it bad on purpose, you have to execute at such a high level because you have to show the audience without ever telling them that you actually know what you're doing. And so by just not executing well and saying that that's the thing we were going for, when you're not executing well, because it's like, it's only funny. Like in Pool Boy here, it's only funny that there's mannequins floating in the pool if we've had like a very technically sound, like Alfred Hitchcock-esque sequence leading up to him discovering the mannequins, right? Because we've executed this tracking shot. The music is swelling in such a way that you're feeling the moment. And then the punchline is the visual gag that it's not a real person.
Well, also the fact that, like, and again, I know that they would try to pass it off as, oh, it was meant to be that way. But it's right. Like, no, fuck you, because that's not how it, like, you're spoofing something. So it has to be in line with what you're spoofing. Right. And it's like when Black Dynamite, when they changed actors, like in the fight right. scene where Michael Jai White actually punches the guy and the guy goes, motherfucker, and it cuts and they change the actor.
Yeah.
So in the mannequin scene in Pool Boy, you would need to establish quickly that it's a mannequin, but quickly then be pulling the real person out. It's like, it's a shot where he's pulling the boy's body out of the pool. It's clearly a mannequin, drops down, cuts to on the
right.
concrete, and it's a real boy. This one, he's fucking around with the goddamn pool thing.
Right.
And it's like, this isn't funny. Like the,
right.
And I can use an example in this movie. The stuff that was done well, that was meant to be bad, is the St. James Street James stuff.
Right.
And it's like, it looks like the Ross Patterson seems like a very talented writer. He's a very funny guy in these vignettes that he does.
Right.
He's clearly done this character for a while and it works. It's like, I want to see more of that guy.
Like, right.
I,
like, that, it's that's the how only
I
left reason.
It. I would love like, and maybe he has it on his website or his YouTube and I just haven't dug deep enough, but like, I would love a web series of this guy's film career.
Right.
I don't give a shit about his. Oh, I did it when I was 10. Dude, just be a weird 70s director because that's what you're trying to do. Like,
okay, yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And it works. And like, that's the shit I would like to see. And to your point with the improv guys saying, why don't we just make it bad? It's doable, but your character can't acknowledge or know that it's bad.
Right, 100%.
That's what Black Dynamite did well. The actors in Black Dynamite straight as straight could be, because in the 70s those blaxploitation movies weren't comedies. They right. were supposed to be serious movies about our culture and our community right. and they were taking themselves really fucking serious. They didn't know that 30-40 years later people like us would watch back and go, that was the funniest shit you're ever gonna watch.
Because yeah, right.
they were shooting on a shoestring budget and it was what it was. And they, you know, right. and now looking back, it's fun. It's goofy. It was acknowledging way too much. And I'm sure there's a phrase for it, but they were acknowledging way too much. Hey, we're in a bad movie.
Yeah. It was like, way too
play it straight. It, that's why the St. James stuff worked. Cause he was playing it as straight. The actress, it was, Edie Patterson, who recently was on The Righteous Gemstones with John Goodman, Kenny Powers, those guys, Danny McBride, not Kenny Powers.
Close enough, we knew what you meant.
She was in the St. James Street James part. She was like his assistant.
Right. And
the two of them worked so well in those scenes. And like, if you've made it this far in this episode, I would say go to Ross Patterson's YouTube page and just watch those videos. Don't watch this fucking movie on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I don't.
Because I'll save you literally 40 minutes. Just go watch that shit on his YouTube channel.
Yeah, because that's funny. There's also the problem of this movie is hyper racist.
Oh, yeah. And again, like, again, this can't even be. I mean, this was made in 2011, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that much of a different time.
No.
And even if it was, this movie was made with the deliberate purpose of being racist.
Right.
And again, it feels like watching the movie that they were like, hey, we're making a really shit movie, so we can fall back on that whenever the hell we're given any criticism.
Right.
It's supposed to be bad. It's like, you can't just be overly racist and say it's because it's a supposed to be a bad movie. A supposed to be a bad. Why am I doing this?
Yeah. All of a sudden you got Italian.
Oh, seriously. But it's like you can't just use that as a crutch to be, horribly racist. And it's like, and you can be racist in movies. Like,
yeah, yes.
There's racism in movies, and some of them are great movies. You look at something, but how racism is used effectively. Tarantino movies, Django Unchained, yes. Hateful Eight. Those are two movies that are really fucking racist, but also won Oscars. I mean?
The thing is that it's just like the driving factor, like the tone of this movie, the pool boy movie, it can be very like different and not as problematic as it is if you just shift one thing, because basically he arrives home from being in Vietnam for 40 years or whatever, and he finds that his wife has been sleeping with the pool boy, and his whole thing was that he was going to start his own pool boy business, but now the Mexicans have taken over, and he's like super mad that the Mexicans have taken over Los Angeles. And it's just like, wow, that's so xenophobic. And like, if you just had it be one of those situations where the pool boy that he ended up killing, that like slept with his wife, is basically just the brother of the cartel, then that would be fine. But even Danny Trejo's character, his whole motivation is just like, I'm an evil Mexican guy. And it's just like, oh, this is uncomfortable at points.
And again, we're going to, we've done it the whole episode. We might as well just keep doing it, pointing back to Black Dynamite, because that was a movie that effectively used racism.
Correct.
Because the whole plot of that movie was the man, aka the white man, basically poisoning malt liquor so that the black men that were drinking it, their dicks would shrivel up. Because black guys have tremendous dicks. It's
right, and the white guy's afraid of it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And we as white men are afraid of it. But
Undercover Brother's another one that uses it effectively. Mm-hmm. And these are both movies. These are both movies that I use as comedy, right? Because there was movies like American History X that uses racism very, very well. But again, that's a drama, So comedy movies that use racism very well. Even Tropic Thunder, if you want to talk about that, talking about race relations and things like that. And it's just like, this movie is extremely tone deaf and it's bad. And then when you add in these elements of it, it's just like, oh, this is unwatchable.
And it's funny that it took us this long to get to the racism. It shows how bad the movie is. It's like that should be like, it feels like it's one of those things like, oh wow, this is like a super racist movie, but it's like, no, it almost gets lost because wow, this movie is just bad all over, man. I don't know. Also, as you mentioned right up at the top of it, one of my big problems was, why wasn't it called Pooh Boy 2? That alone could have been one of the jokes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a telling of a movie that's a sequel to a movie that was destroyed. And the whole, what was the actor's name? The Paul Ben Victor scene, where he's the producer, he's telling the backstory of St. James Street James as a 10-year-old boy, and he made the first movie, and blah, 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 and they were like at sea or something, and a harpoon shot the film.
They were on their way to Cannes.
It was goofy as shit, but you know what? Fuck it, it worked, man. And then it was also in that moment that I sat there going, well, why isn't this movie called Pooh Boy 2? Because the movie in this movie is called Pooh Boy 2 Drowning Out the Fury. It's not like they had a different name.
The worst part is that Pooh Boy 2 stuck in my brain more than Pool Boy Drowning Out the Fury did. And every single time that I've mentioned it on this show prior to watching it, I've wanted to say Pool Boy 2. And I'm like, again, I haven't seen this movie since, again, like 2011, 2012. Sure. And I'm like, that's not the name of it. Why do I keep calling it Pool Boy 2? And then I'm watching the movie and it's just like, oh yeah, it is Pool Boy 2 drowning out the Fury. But that's the joke. The joke is that Pool Boy Fury 1 or Pool Boy was never released.
Yeah. Again, and it's a subtle thing that in the grand scheme of things probably doesn't matter, but it's an easy joke to get.
Right.
You know, because you sit there and you're watching this movie, you're like, because honestly, there's no information on the internet on this movie, which also,
right.
It's not like the Blair Witch Project. It's not done by design. There's just no fucking information on this movie. So, yeah, it could have been a funny inside joke where you name your movie a sequel and you got guys like me sitting there being like, well, I have to watch the first one, spending all day Googling, being like, where the fuck is this movie?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like the Shaq Shazam movie or wherever it was, Sinbad Shazam. Which one doesn't exist, but everybody believes it exists?
The Sinbad genie movie.
Yeah, exactly. I'm one of those people that completely, I'm like, yes, I've definitely seen pictures. I've seen box art of that.
Yeah.
I don't believe it does. I think because I've spent days, not in a row, but every couple of years, someone will mention it. I'll be like, you know what? I still remember seeing that. And I'll spend a day online being like, motherfucker, it doesn't exist.
It's not a how he hasn't done one since is
I love that he hasn't, actually. Because it's one of those things, like, you know he knows about that. You know that urban legend has hit him at a certain point. And it's like, it'd be very easy to just do one or do a fake trailer for it or something like that.
Yeah.
Like and the fact that he hasn't, it's like, good. He's keeping it alive. I want to think.
That's what I would do is I would do it as an April Fool's joke. Is I would
do a trailer,
shoot it in a 90s vein. And then release it on, you know what I mean? Like, that's a good April Fool's joke.
I'd like that. I knew I recognized him. Didn't know until the credits who it was. Ahmed Best was in this. Of course, Ahmed Best was, we mentioned Star Wars earlier, Jar Jar Binks. He was, what's the character name? Sidney Moncrief. He was the basketball player at the end.
Yes.
Was sleeping with everybody.
Yeah.
Because that was another funny joke. Every woman in this one was a whore.
Yeah, right. Well, and again, and it's just like it's a joke that doesn't really work where it's like
if, if it was just Kevin Sorbo's wife, right? If Kevin Sorbo's wife was sleeping with everybody while he was in Vietnam, okay, Kevin Sorbo's wife, giant whore, but it was every guy in this movie. Yeah, he slept with my wife too, and then we cut to scene where some random woman we haven't seen in the movie yet is getting railed by Ahmed Best, and it's like, every woman's a whore.
right. And again, it's just like, I get it. This movie is supposed to be made by a 10-year-old, but again, you're not like, have you ever seen
racist? That's the problem.
Right. Have you been on Xbox Live?
But you know what I mean? Like I'm just thinking of myself as a 10-year-old, like it's not.
Yeah.
It's no, the not thing childish is, enough.
Have you ever watched Sugar Boy online? So Sugar Boy is a above average show. I think it's above average, but it's on YouTube. It's very funny. It's basically it's basically this boy is hopped up on sugar and like tells you a story of a movie he wants to make. And it's insanity. It's absolute insanity. And it feels like they're trying to capture that energy, but it's not good.
Maybe. Okay. I can kind of see that. It just, you know, a lot of that stuff feels like it might have been patched in at after the fact because they realized they couldn't make the movie they wanted to make. So, hey, let's you know, we haven't done the St. James Street James stuff yet. So let's work a lot of shit into this just so we can, you know, give ourselves a story. And again, I wholeheartedly believe that these are probably, you know, it's probably made by two really nice guys that are friendly as fuck because everyone's doing favors in this. Al from Home Improvement shows up at one point with double shotguns. Like,
yeah,
it's just so kills weird.
The valet.
Kills the valet. You know, and it's, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just not, it's not a good, bad movie. You know what I mean?
No, no, it's not.
And again, I'm trying to not come off like a snobbish dick because I like trash cinema. We've mentioned it many, many times.
Yeah.
Like I'm a massive Troma guy, and Troma is low budget as fuck, man. And but they make low budget, but they put everything they got onto the screen, right?
Right.
And they're not the good Troma movies, and there are some bad ones. You know, I'm not gonna say everything is wonderful. The good Troma movies aren't sitting there being like, you know, oh, we're relying on this crutch that we're bad cinema, so we're just going to do... No, it's like...
They go for it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and I feel some of the stuff in this movie was probably referencing some of that, because Lloyd Kaufman has used the same car exploding from the original Toxic Avenger in literally every movie he's made. Yeah. But it's like, this whole movie was stock footage. You know what I mean? And then that guy literally yells, I don't want to die in stock footage. And I'm like... All right. I know a lot of people nowadays have like the attention span of a fucking snail, but do we have to spoon feed every joke?
Yeah, right.
Like the thing with the mannequins. It was like that. There was room for that to be funny, but he spent 20 minutes fucking around with the pool skimmer.
Yeah. And again, it's just, it's the idea. It's every single bad student film you've ever watched.
And that was the other thing I thought of this afternoon, was like, this is a movie that if you watch it and you've ever said, I would like to make a movie, you watch this and it's like, yeah, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can absolutely make a movie and get it on Amazon Prime. I mean,
yeah.
Pool Boy right. exists.
Yeah. There's no, like, that movie was shot with a video camera. Like, you know what I mean? With probably no lights. You know,
like I said, you get a video camera, a guy with a decent backyard, and someone who has a basic knowledge of visual effects on Adobe Premiere.
Yeah.
Make a movie.
Most of the
bullet hits weren't even good visual effect bullets.
No, they're all stock video visual effects.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can get that on VideoBlocks, hashtag not a sponsor. But you go on VideoBlocks, there's just green screen digital squib hits like that you can just pop on. It's the same thing of like when you look at a film like Birdemic, right? Have we not seen Birdemic?
It sounds too familiar for me to have not seen it.
It's one of those sci-fi original movies, like in the vein of like Sharknado or, you know, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, that sort of thing.
Birdemic, Shock and Terror from 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, and so one of the things on that is they had stock footage of birds that they just put in the sky because it was supposed to be like a new telling of Hitchcock's The Birds. But you look at the special effects, and they're CGI birds that are just hanging in the air flapping, and it's just like that's the type of thing that, you know. But again, you look at something like Pool Boy, and – the difference between Pool Boy and Birdemic is Birdemic is trying its balls off. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to make a real fucking horror movie, and they're just failing at it. And that's what makes it good.
And like, I've seen movies, you know, I've seen independent movies or no budget movies that look like this, you know, that look like they were shot this way with, like I said, zero budget, bunch of friends getting together on a weekend and making a movie. It's shot on video. It doesn't look good, but you watch it and you're like, you know, God damn it. These guys are going for it and they're trying their asses off, and they, you know, they wrote a story and they're trying to tell it. It's not good, but they're trying. That's what came across in this movie, was like, they're relying on a lot of crutches that like I said, and it's like, when I can sit here and tell you how to fix something without costing you a dime, you already green screened this one actor, just have another guy stand in front of Danny Trejo. That fixes that joke for you. It still works. You know what I mean? Like, you established you had to film him on a green screen in prison, and he's in a room with another actor. You've lost your original joke now.
Right. And that's the point of that we bring back to Black Dynamite. Black Dynamite paid attention to those details, and that's why that movie works, whereas this one didn't and doesn't.
And again, it's like you mentioned tone and all that stuff. I don't know, it feels like they don't know what they want this movie to be. And we mentioned it right off the top. It's like, it felt like it was at one time supposed to be like Black Dynamite, but because they couldn't do it like Black Dynamite, they went the mockumentary way.
Right.
And it's a mess because...
It's a mess.
Because you're watching it and you... Again, if you're going to be absurd, you need to stick with your absurdities. I can't stress that enough. I feel like I've been saying it for months now.
It's been a couple
of weeks because we've been doing absurd movies like, you know, Furnace and stuff like that. But it's very valid. And if you're going to show me, like they established when the St. James Street James opens up this movie and he does his whole big long opening. It was great. I was all in on it. And his assistant there, you know, clumsily puts in the VHS because she's only been to modeling school and she's never going to break eye contact with the camera. All in on all that shit.
Yeah, right.
And then they start playing and it's established that we are watching the movie.
Yes.
And at a certain point, I can even get away with, okay, we're watching a movie with St. James Street James and he's pausing the movie
and talking to us.
He's talking. But then there's the scene right before the mannequin scene where Kevin Sorbo busts in the door and the actor playing the kid is with the crew doing blow on the living room table. Right. And I'm like, this is not a movie. This is an outtake of a production club. It's like, you need to establish what the fuck we're watching. You can't just do stuff because you think it's hilarious that a kid is doing cocaine. It's like, but again, let me fix it for you. What would have made more sense is if the kid and the wife were sitting in the living room with Brian Callen's character, who was Eduardo, doing cocaine. There you go. Okay? There's the conflict there. But it's like we didn't do that because we had already killed the kid and the wife. And now here's the kid, the actor kid. And it's like, you're just doing stuff.
Right.
With no thought process put into it. That's what I need a little bit more thought put into this movie. And I'm getting to that point also where I'm like, I feel like we're putting more thought in than the people who made it. So we might want to wrap this up. You thinking?
Yeah.
That's pool boy.
That's pool boy. Drowning out the fury. All right. Woosah, Mike. All right.
And it's just more infuriating, and it's, part of it's laziness and part of it's just not, just excuse making, but it's like, this is a prime example of if you have something, right? Like if you want to make movies and you have something, somebody will buy it. You know what I mean? Like Amazon Prime paid, I don't know how much, can't be a lot, but they paid to have that movie in their library. Yep. You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of like going out and doing it because that's half the battle in production because it can be absolute garbage. But I can tell you right now that Pool Boy Drowning Out the Fury is a better movie than any movie that I've made because I haven't made one.
Go make movies. If you want to make movies, go make movies because there's enough streaming services out there. Somebody will give you a buck for it.
Yeah, somebody will.
You know what I mean? And if it's good enough, that buck could turn into a career. Who knows?
Right.
Stranger fucking things have happened. It's 2020. I think we're done with that.
Yeah, we're definitely
next week is our 3-year anniversary on the show. Did you know that?
What? No, I didn't.
Yes, it is. We're coming up on 3 years of that movie show. So this year I figured for the third anniversary of that movie show, we would cover the movie that basically invented podcasting.
Okay.
We're going to do Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater.
Okay.
And it is available on Amazon Prime for those of you listening if you want to play at home, which is very cool because up until a couple months ago, it was like historically not available anywhere to stream, mostly due to music rights because it's a fantastic music movie as well. Sure. So yeah, pump up the volume next week for the third anniversary of that movie show. For Mike Wendt and Eddie McCabe, please follow us on social media at Mike Wendt, at the Eddie McCabe, hashtag that movie show. Recommend something for us to review that's better than the movie we just did today, and we will love you forever. The website is thatmovieshow.net. The Facebook page, facebook.com/thatmovieshowtv. We are on any and all podcasting apps. So rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. Eddie, anything else to plug?
No, not today.
All right.
Well, I hope you voted, or if you want to join my Mad Max gang, either one.
We got to come up with a good name for your new Mad Max game. Gang.
Yeah.
Gang. Anyway, I want a blindfold and two guns. Sure. I feel them going. All right, thanks for joining us as we peter out here on this episode of That Movie Show. And we'll see you back here next week for Pump Up the Volume.
Bye, everybody. That's Hooey Valley, Hooey Hollywood, where any office boy or young
mechanic can be a panic. Just a different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can drive change or build an empire. Because old ideas aren't cutting it anymore. This new year, we need a new generation of thinking, your way of thinking. So whatever you have in mind that will help make a different future, find everything you need to get started at GoDaddy.com. Because the future isn't decided yet. It's still ours to win. Start different at GoDaddy.com. A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can drive change or build an empire. We need a new generation of thinking. Your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com.